This is Christ Together Radio. For the next hour, listen in as hosts Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy discuss how God is working in the Church of Western New York. God is on a mission in Buffalo, and we want you to hear about what is happening and where it's happening, and join in. So grab that second cup of coffee and listen in to Christ Together Radio.
Welcome to another week of Christ Together Radio. I'm Brett Larson from WDCX, and we've got Ryan Cozy here as pastor of Missional Living at the Chapel at Cross Point. At the Chapel.
Chapel. We happen to be at Cross Point, but we're also at Lockport and Cheektowaga.
Your office is at the Cross Point location.
Yes.
And so, anyway, we've been doing the Christ Together Radio thing for a number of weeks now, and bringing you every week different things that are happening in the church and as God is on mission in Western New York. And we've talked about everything from church planning and kind of the theory of church planning, what that can do to, you know, evangelism, to missional behavior, which is evangelism, which is reaching people with the gospel, to last week we talked about adoption and fostering and what that means for the church to get involved in that in real practical ways that have been set up for you, the church, to get involved in reaching the poor and the marginalized, really the weak among us, who you know, the children. What can get more innocent and weak than a young child, and who needs help? And a lot of times, there's just not enough help there. And so we've talked about adoption, and we brought in Steve and fostering. We brought in Steve Passant from Gateway Longview, and also from the Chapel to talk with us about the Every Child Initiative, what it means to make a difference in a child's life and what that can do for the gospel. So, Ryan, I'm looking forward to continuing our conversation as Steve joins us again this week.
Absolutely.
About foster care and adoption. I know something that you care about deeply, and you know, that a number of your colleagues at the Chapel have stepped up.
Yeah.
And I think it's cool.
It's been great. I mean, and, you know, last week Steve even talked about how the Every Child Initiative is connected not just locally and regionally, but also in world places as well. And so we've had some team members at the Chapel adopt internationally, which has been great. We've had some folks foster locally and end up fostering to adopt. And then we've had other team members have gotten engaged in kind of providing a wraparound help. And that's kind of an area where, just in our personal lives, as the Cozy family, that's been an area where even recently we've been able to provide some help in a unique way, and it's been encouraging. I feel like one of the things that's really interesting about this journey is this process deepens your spiritual formation, and just gives you a deeper appreciation for all the work that God is doing in the region and how he's still at work in you. He's sanctifying you. This is a sanctifying process. Very humbling process.
Steve, welcome. We just got a minute left here before the break, but we're going to get into some interesting things today, talk about some real life experiences and what it means to put your yes on the table, as you gave your testimony last week. It means a lot, doesn't it? I mean, it's a big yes.
It is. It is a huge yes. It is a huge yes.
You say nervously laughing. No, it is. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute here. If you want to listen to last week's show, go to WDCXradio.com, click on Programs, Christ Together Radio. You can listen to all of our shows right there on the interwebs, and turn your computer on and
open your Netscape browser.
Dial up through the AOLs and listen to what we're doing. Anyway, listen in. You can kind of track along with the journey that we're going on ourselves and taking you along for the ride on with Christ Together Radio. We're going to be back in just a minute, and we're going to get into real-life fostering, adoption, what it means to get involved in the lives of children in Western New York specifically, but also just children in general. Mm-hmm. So stay with us, Christ Together Radio.
This is Christ Together Radio with WDCX General Manager Brett Larson and Pastor Ryan Cozy, Pastor of Missional Living at the Chapel.
Welcome back to Christ Together Radio, where the breaks are more fun than the show. And I'm Brett Larson, and joining Ryan Cozy and Steve Passant as we talk about the Every Child Initiative that is taking place in Western New York and beyond, really. Mm-hmm. But as a church, begin to reach out to kids who need help. And Steve, last week you explained a lot about what it meant for you to put your yes on the table and to get involved. And even the story, really touching story of your daughter and when you adopted her, and just the magnitude of sitting in front of that judge when it happened, and mm-hmm. and kind of the good and the bad, you know.
Yeah.
Tell us a story, Steve. No, let us know what has happened in your journey that has been special to you, or and that has maybe affirmed when you put your yes on the table that God has called you specifically for a time like this to be an example and to be a leader in this area.
Yeah, I think just our full on journey through foster care has reaffirmed that. So every time where I felt, and my wife and I felt we couldn't go any further, God always provided that strength for us to continue on, right? Mm-hmm. When we said this is going to be the last child because we just don't have the energy, we don't have the time, and that child would leave the home, and then 2 days later we'd get a call for another child, and without even thinking, it was just, sure, yeah, we'll take another child, right? I mean, that itself is reaffirming. When you talk about putting your yes on the table, you have to back it up with the actions, right? Yeah. I mean, it's very easy for me to say, yes, we're going to do this. And then we try it and to say, okay, well, it was a challenge for us and it's not for us. That's okay. You know, families make those decisions. But at the same time, if we're really putting the yes on the table and we truly feel that faith is what's holding us together, God's going to be there to provide for us. He mm-hmm. provides the strength. He provides mm-hmm. the finances. He provides the support. He provides everything that we couldn't see that was right in front of us. Excuse me, came up mm-hmm. to the table, right? It was just put out there. You know, our yes was there, and God was there through every single time that we thought we couldn't go on any further.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Was there any point in time with a specific child or something that came your way where you were in the midst of it and you thought, we're done. We're just done. And then it actually kind of God turned it around in a way that only could point to him with that child.
Yeah. Yeah. So I shared the story last show with the little infant with the skull fracture.
Yeah.
I mean, that really was the time where we had we had three other children in the home at the time, so we were caring for four children at that time, and they were all under the age of two. And so
Oh my goodness.
It was crazy.
I did not realize that.
It was crazy. Our oldest would have been about two, maybe a little over two, actually.
Yeah.
So we had two two-year-olds, and then a one-year-old, and then this infant.
Were any of them related, or were they all – they're all different?
Some of them were related. Okay. Some are from other families. Four of my five adopted children are siblings, so they're biologically related. You know, I mean, we just talk about biology, so biologically they're related, but honestly, you know, we're a family, so we're all related, but,
where
I'm going with it.
Right.
But, yeah, so it was that infant that, man, after really 3 weeks of just nonstop crying and trying to get this child fed and dealing with withdrawal from, you know, the chemical dependency that she was born with, and it was just beyond taxing. And mm-hmm. so, you know, right when we thought we were at our end, we were very blessed to have my mother-in-law, who was a nurse at Children's and had experience, who really just came alongside us mm-hmm. constantly to support. And so right when we were at our breaking point, similar to Ryan's story during the last show, a family member had stepped up for this little girl. Mm-hmm. And just out of nowhere, and we're like, oh, of course, you know, because now we've worked through the challenges with this child, and now you're gonna
get all the glory.
But the thing is, you know, it's true. It's kind of how it felt, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But they came forward, and they were a phenomenal family, just phenomenal. And that was the point where, you know, I think the aha moment with God, you know, personally was, you're doing this for those families.
Yeah.
Right. I can't fix these kids, and that's not our job in foster care, is to fix them. Our job isn't to fix the family. Our job is to support the family, to partner with the family, to teach the family, to show them again that they have a family outside of their family here on earth, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the approach that we take. So after that child had then transitioned out of our home, when we thought we were done, you know, it couldn't have been maybe a week or two later, we got another phone call, and to us, it was just God saying, no, you're not done yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got more for you.
Ryan, as a pastor of a church who's, you know, diving headlong into this, mm-hmm. What changes have you seen in individuals or maybe as a church as a whole? Or how has it affected the ministry of the chapel?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the first things that we've experienced as a team is just a deeper sense of appreciation for how diverse the kingdom of God really is. Hmm. I mean, I would say that that's been one of the biggest things. And honestly, exercising cultural sensitivity. So there are just situations where perhaps a non-Anglo family takes in an Anglo child. Or an Anglo family takes in a non-Anglo child. And so you know, basically I feel like the Lord brings the diversity of his kingdom, his people, to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing, though, is it creates a way deeper sense of appreciation for the brokenness of what when you really talk about every man, woman, and child having repeated opportunities to hear, see, and respond to the gospel, you are confronted with the brokenness in this region. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that that brokenness isn't redemptive, because that's, I mean, this is really important to me. Some of the greatest wins that you can do in foster care is to be a bridge so that mom and dad, or mom alone or dad alone, whatever, that they can get the help that they need to be the parent that they want to be. Mm-hmm. So there's people that are, you know, they're in a system, and there's others where, you know, there's just not, maybe they're not just not ready to be a parent, but biologically they are a parent, right? So you have that, but there are others that they want to be a good parent and they want to provide care. So you see the brokenness of when you put your yes on the table for every man, woman, and child, you realize how challenging and how lost the world is. You get a deeper sense of appreciation for the diversity of the kingdom. But I would also say you are also confronted with the reality of the need for good counseling help. And so we actually have had this happen at the chapel a number of times. One is it's okay to ask for help, but there's just been a great counselor who's joined us fairly regularly. Lori. She's a counselor, and she has. I've gone to a handful of these meetings where you just sit in there, and she's like, "Okay, what do the foster care families want to talk about tonight?" And she just listens. And the wisdom that she provides. I mean, mm-hmm. She has given her life to trying to provide family counseling for situations just like this.
This is something that Gateway provides?
It's actually provided through Every Child. So what Ryan's referring to is a group we call Relational Parenting. Mm-hmm. And so it's actually a wonderful success story of the church, actually, and Every Child. We started a couple years back, and you know, again, one of the things I had talked about was the need for support for families. Yes, agencies provide it, but it's not necessarily on a deep level like mm-hmm. a lot of families require. And so, as Ryan said, Lori Krall had come forward and said, hey, I'm willing to offer my services on a volunteer basis just to kind of help facilitate that. So we said, all right, let's see what happens. So we really invited about four or five families just to come and share, just to see how it went. And as a result, they had the support. You know, it was that, hey, me too moment during that hour of just kind of support group. You know, like, hey, we're challenged with this kid because X behavior. I feel like I'm on an island. And then Lori would provide some insight or some guidance around that. Well, that small group of about five families has, by word of mouth, just literally blossomed into now we do two sessions every month, the first and third Wednesday of every month. And Lori facilitates the first session on the Wednesdays, and I facilitate actually the second session. But we're up to, I don't even know how many families now. We typically are you know, 25, 30 people in a room for each of those sessions. And we encourage anybody and everybody to join those. It's open to anybody who's fostering and adopting. It doesn't matter if you're an agency that we've, you know, quote, officially partner with or mm-hmm. listed on our website, any foster adoptive family that just needs an avenue to get support is welcome to come to those yeah. meetings.
And it's interesting, too, because some of those meetings, and I haven't been to a few, I haven't been to one in a little while, but when my wife and I were connected to it more regularly, one you know, some nights it's very like, I have a very significant situation. Here's the scenario. What do I do? So sometimes it's very tactical. And other times it's just, you just see families crying going, I'm just so happy that I know that I'm not the only one in this church dealing with this situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's this community bond that forms. There's tactical help and you know, kind of counseling help. But then there's just also, you know, those deeper moments of community where you can just cry and go, I'm overwhelmed. I feel like I failed this week. Those are very real feelings, you know, that foster parents. I mean, you have those moments as biological parents. Like, I feel like, what time is it? I'm sure I failed at, you know, something as a parent, you know. But then when you try to put your yes on the table in terms of fostering, you it's almost like you raise this bar like you're supposed to be more of a perfect parent because, you know, you don't want to let anybody down. And, that, yeah. you know, that's not an easy thing to carry sometimes.
Yeah, and there's some hard situations too, I'm sure, that come into fostering. It's not like you're not taking in kids who have had, you know, normal, what I call normal,
right.
family experiences. I mean, these kids have been through some stuff, and a lot of times they're just hurting, but it comes out in ways that you think they're just belligerent or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I mean, when we train people and we talk to new families, we tell them oftentimes kids don't have the ability to express feelings. So they can't put a word to the feeling, and those feelings are always going to be exhibited through behaviors. And yeah. the behavior doesn't necessarily coincide with what the real feeling is. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, we tell people that, honestly, I've seen kids at 5 and 6 years old who have probably had more life experiences than I will ever have to endure in my life. And I'm not saying good. These are traumatic life experiences. And so, you know, you can only imagine a six-year-old who, whatever, has been neglected for 6 months and might not have food every single day because of whatever mom's challenges are. You know, I mean, that's just – it's hard to picture, but it's common. You know, unfortunately, it is common. But, you know, and oftentimes when you talk about foster care and adoption, all you hear are the horror stories, right? You hear about all these kids who are enduring these horrible traumatic situations and parents. And, you know, we think about how kids come into care. But when you break it down, there's many reasons. You know, there are families in very affluent areas where their children are being entered into foster care, maybe because mom and dad or mom is suffering from a terminal illness and she's hospitalized and that child needs care. Mm-hmm. And there's been no parenting lapse or no parenting delay there. You know, the child's raised well and everything's fine. But, you know, there's other reasons kids come into care outside of the typical, oh, my goodness, you know, think worst case scenario.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. That reminds me of our conversation a few weeks ago with PATH, with Julie Palmer, People Against Trafficking Humans. Your conception is that this is an urban issue, marginalized, you know, poor. Yes, that happens. But, you know, she's also talking about kids from Clarence coming into care, kids from Tonawanda coming into care, Kenmore coming into care. And it's just an eye-opener of, like, man, this brokenness, this challenge is all around us, you know. And it's a big part of, again, the goal of saturation, seeing every man, woman, and child have repeated opportunities, hear, see, experience the gospel. It requires our interaction with this conversation.
I also think, Ryan, it brings to light the fact that when we speak of reaching people with the gospel, we're not speaking of building in numbers. We're not speaking of building up a church,
right?
A church building, a church body. We're speaking of giving people hope.
Mm-hmm.
And we often kind of look at it like wins and losses, almost like a football game. Like we're trying to win more. We're trying to. I think even that word "win more" is maybe a bad word that for lack of a better term, we use it. But we're not really trying to win them to our side. We're trying to change lives.
Mm-hmm.
And as we hear about kids, you know, who may not get food every day, like you said, Seaver, there's really. Really difficult situations that happen in our context in America, in Buffalo, in Western New York, in Niagara County, in Erie. Man, that puts teeth to it from my perspective. That how can we not be involved?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how can it be something that we don't get involved in? We're going to talk more about this in just a minute. If you want to know more about what is happening between Gateway Longview and the chapel and a number of other churches, go to every-child.com. That's every and then a dash sign, child.com, everychild.com. And that'll give you plenty of information. If you want to listen to last week's episode or to other episodes or find more out about Christ Together Radio, go to WDCXradio.com, click on Programs, Christ Together Radio. You can find out everything you need to know about Ryan, his checkered past, and I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Sorry. Awesome. I'm kind of kidding. No, anyway, check that out, and we'll be back right after this with more really not too funny stuff and talking about adoption, foster care, and along with Steve Poisson.
Email your questions to Brett and Ryan about anything you've heard or just about anything you can think of. Send them to ctr@wdcxradio.com. That's ctr@wdcxradio.com.
Welcome back to Christ Together Radio. Talking with Steve Poisson today from Gateway Longview and the Chapel at Crosspoint about the Every Child Initiative, reaching children who are fostered and also in the area of adoption as we become the church to people who need the church, people who need to see Christ and need hope. And we just finished up our last little segment there talking about some real experiences and how you know, how God works in the midst of very difficult situations. And Steve, I wonder if we talked about the reality of children and what they need and some of the real stories that are out there. This is real. It's not theoretical. It's not up in the sky. It's real down-to-earth ministry, hands-on ministry. But with that comes some mess. And I don't want to be negative because we want people to get involved in this, so we don't want to scare them. But on the other hand, you really do have to think about what you're doing before you get involved in fostering and adoption.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I think one of the things we encourage people all the time, really we have what we refer to our 12 skills that we look for successful foster parents. And the number one skill that we really look for you to know your family. And that's not just saying, okay, I know these are the people within my four walls, but it's really understanding the impact that bringing another child into your home is going to have. And this is not a child that you've had 9 months to prepare for. This isn't necessarily a healthy, bouncing baby. But not only the four people within your walls, but when you think about your family, we encourage people to look outside of your own four walls and who do you consider part of your family. So you have to look at things like grandparents, aunts, uncles, your church family, you know, your work family. How is this really going to impact the whole scenario? And I think, you know, you're going to see a lot of times that there's some surprises out there. Mm-hmm. Things that you would have never guessed may be issues for some people. You know, we talked about, you know, maybe an Anglo family taking in a non-Anglo child or vice mm-hmm. versa. And you may be prepared for that with you and your spouse or you individually, but maybe grandparents aren't ready for that. Right. Maybe you're okay with behaviors. Maybe you're okay with certain age of children, but your kids, you have to think about how it's going to affect them also in terms of your youngest might not be the youngest anymore, and how are they going to react to that, right? There's a whole bunch of things, a litany of things that we can go through to really think about because, yeah, it's not just, like we've said, it's not about saying, I want a new child in my home. Because this child is going to come with challenges. You are going to be challenged. But there are a ton of success stories out there as well, right? Again, we can focus very easily on the challenges and the difficulties with foster care, but there are just as many positive outcomes to it as well.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. A lot of things that you're saying, it just take me right back to the class, you know, the first time my wife and I went through the class. And, you know, I think you hit on something really important there that all the while that God is preparing you in working in your family's life to get to a point where you're putting your yes on the table and you're going through the classes. Yeah, I found that there was a process whereby they actually interview you and they want to know all about your family history. And boy, was that revealing. Some of the things that I learned, like, wow, okay, that could be a challenge for a placement in our home related to family or related to an issue that I went through or whatever. And it is interesting because sometimes you make the assumption that as you know God is working in your mind to be prepared for this, you kind of forget that maybe your support network is you're not always in the communicative loop with them, mm-hmm. and so you find yourself God's making you hear and I mean to be honest, like I think there were times where as the Lord had been working in our lives to say yes to this. That we could look at our family, and no judgment to them, but mm-hmm. I could look at my mom and my dad, and I could kind of see like that they were like, "What? So what are you like? Why
are you crazy?
What's going on?" Yeah. And you know, to in all fairness to them, I mean, they're looking at us, and we're swimming with our own kids. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a fair question that they had, but I mean, it points out something that it's an opportunity as you do this. To also bring others in your circle along, to help them to understand the gospel, to help them understand why you say yes to something like this, and to acknowledge because the guarantee of foster care is that you will be over your head.
Yeah.
That when people point out to you that you're in over your head, it's a great opportunity for you to say absolutely. And I think you mentioned this earlier, either in this segment or maybe last week. How could you do that? And you can turn to them and say, yeah, you're right. I'm in over my head, but how can I say no mm-hmm. to this? Because there's not enough people saying yes. And that's a very sobering moment for people. But it's also, I think, it's a very godly moment to invite people to die a little bit more to themselves so that they can help and serve other people. And it's not easy. It's not easy. So.
Yeah, and it reminds me of another question that we constantly heard as and still here as foster parents, and when I ask people, you know, well, what's preventing you from doing this? And the number one answer is always, I could never give them back. Right? Yeah. I mean, everyone always says that. And I go back to faith, and I think to myself, and I typically will share with people, well, the point is, they were never yours to begin with, right? Like, you have to look at it from the bigger picture. And when I say not yours, I'm not even saying, like, they're biological parents, right?
God's.
They are God's children.
That's a great point.
So this is God trusting me as one of his own children to take care of another one of his own. So who am I giving this child back to? I'm giving the child back to God. And God is in that birth parent that might be going through the struggle, right? Mm-hmm. So we're all his children. And so I'm helping one of my siblings, basically, you know, it sounds a little silly, but that's how we kind of approach it. That's how we always approach it. Mm-hmm. And sure, it's sad. Sure. It breaks your heart when they go home. Of course it does. But at the same time, you go with the idea that they're going in faith, right? And, and we're living in faith and prayer that they're going to be successful.
Yeah.
Let me just ask you this. Is there like a level at which you different families go into the idea of fostering to where you're like, look, I'm a long termer, I'm a short termer, I can take this, I can take that. If I do get this, I have, you know, attachment issues, I don't want to give anybody up, so give me somebody that's more long term or the reverse.
The problem with foster care is there's never a black or white. So when a child comes into care, unfortunately, we don't really know how long that child's going to be in any given home.
Mm-hmm.
It can be a week. It can be 2 years. The story that I shared last week with my daughter that we adopted, she actually was placed in our home as what they called an emergency placement. So she was placed on a Friday till they could find a long-term home for her that following Monday. Well, here I am 13 years later, and she's
still looking
adopted.
For that home, Steve.
Yeah. I mean, it worked out in the long run. So there's, unfortunately, there's not a yes or specific length of time. However, the families that are getting involved, yes, we do. We screen and we talk to them about what types of children can you help, right? There are different levels of foster care. We have what they refer to as traditional foster care. So those are the kids that come in with a goal of always reunification. Mm-hmm. So trying to get that child back to a family member. And if that doesn't happen, then it could turn into adoption for the foster family or the child would transition to another adoptive home. Short term, though, we also are always looking for what we call respite families. So the best way to explain respite, it's almost like a long-term babysitting situation. So let's assume, you know, my wife and I take a child into our home, and for whatever reason, circumstances come up and we need someone else to take this child for a week. Maybe we had a family vacation planned from a year ago. Mm-hmm. And that leads into a whole nother can of worms of, you know, how can you get the child to go with you and things like that. But sometimes it just doesn't work out. So we don't ask families to put their lives on hold. So I would reach out and say, we need respite. They may call Ryan and his wife and say, hey, you're a respite family. Can you take the child for a week? And then when we come back, that child would transition back into our home. And so it really is a great way for people who are considering this to become certified still as a foster home and start with respite care to see, how does your family deal with the bonding, with the attachment, with the child coming and going? How did it affect your family dynamic? How did it test your faith? You know, is this something you can or cannot do? And if you can't take children in, how else can you get involved then?
Yeah, well, how else can, other than taking children in, I mean, is there other supportive ways that people can get involved? Or like, I think it was interesting you said that, because I learned that for the first time, that there's the respite care option where people can kind of kick the tires a little bit and see if this is something that they can even handle. You know, a lot of it's an interesting thing as I think through, you know, foster care especially, is that typically the people who are more geared to be able to do this are younger families who have kids. The problem is they have kids and their lives are, you know, running on 10 plus of crazy anyway. Yeah. You know, I've got three kids that I have to take to sports tonight and they have to be in three places at once and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, holy cow, I could never do this. But they're the ones that kind of have the energy and the skill set to take care of kids. So that's a real challenge in foster ministry or care, isn't it?
Yeah, at times it is. You know, in all honesty, we have families. The families are so varied, just like the children. I love this story, actually. I think about there's a young lady at the chapel who, she became a mentor to a teenager, and she was, I believe, early 20s. Yeah. You know who I'm referring to.
It's a beautiful story,
It's a beautiful
man.
Story.
Beautiful.
She became a mentor to this teenager, and after a while, they had formed such an incredible bond that in her early 20s, she decided that she was going to make a lifelong commitment to this teenager and officially went through the process of becoming certified and then adopted the teenager. Hmm. So we have like a 24, 25-year-old young lady who has adopted a 17-year-old. So
it's crazy.
It's crazy,
but it's the kingdom. It is so beautiful, that story. You know, just out of an experience, one of the things, this may seem like a real small thing, and I know you say like, hey, young families seem suitable for that. Mm-hmm. I would really say like, actually, God will use all generations of folks. But I can tell you this. We happened, in our experience, one of the things that you have to be available for is when mom or dad is still in the game or they're still in the picture, that they have the ability to visit the child. And so it's not necessarily that they're going to come to your house. And so a lot of times they'll come to Gateway, you know, in our experience. And so one of the things that requires is that the family that's watching the child, if it's determined by a judge that biological mom or dad will have visitation on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 90 minutes, each one of what that means is that you, as the foster family, have to figure out a way to get that child down to North Street in Symphony Circle so that they can get the visitation. And you want the parents to have that. It's not – but what it does require is that if, you know, you're a young family and you got kids that are pre, you know, elementary school, mom, I mean, this was the story for my wife. I got to load my kids up and I've got to take the kids to, you know, Symphony Circle. I've got to then occupy my kids for a while mom watches biological kid. And there's also a chance that biological mom won't show up or biological dad won't show up.
So
and
you
so
get everybody ready, get them down there.
So the logistic of transportation, it sounds like a little thing, but I mean, this is where someone who's 40, 50 years old or whatever, I mean, older in life,
might be more free.
They can do that, you know. So there's really like just an amazing number of ways that people can help.
Yeah. But, you know, we talk about the issues or the hard part about it, but it's worth it all, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, I'm blessed to have five children in my home that I would have never guessed. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's so. it's so amazing how life just happens the way it's supposed to happen. You know, I mean, we anticipate, oh, we're going to have two kids, you know, a boy and then a girl. And then when that plan fell apart, it was like, okay, here's your family now.
Yeah. And yeah. And it's more, and God,
way more than I could have ever hoped and prayed for.
And here's the cool thing too. God never puts you in a situation that you can't handle. He'll shut the door if he knows that you're going to implode, and you know, he may stretch you, he may make it uncomfortable. Again, an American issue. We're not saved to comfort. We're not, you know, when you take on the gospel and you take on the life of a Christ follower, the Bible pretty much guarantees life gets a little harder. Mm-hmm. Actually, not a lot easier. Okay. It's not this, you know, it's not the road of comfort. It's the narrow road. It's a difficult road, but it's worth it all in the end. And think of a song, actually, just my friend Benji Cowart.
Would you like me to sing it?
Would you, Ryan, we're going to just let Benji sing it sometime.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, ti, la, sol, fa, mi, re, do.
Well, now that we're digressing rapidly, we're going to take a quick break. But before we do that, I want to remind you, to go to WDCXradio.com, click on programs, Christ Together, listen to some of our older programs that we've done all about the mission of God in Western New York and what he's doing on mission. And also you can listen to last week's episode with Steve Passant talking about adoption and foster care and the Every Child Initiative. Every-child.com, that's every and then dash mark child.com, will tell you more about the Every Child initiative that is happening in Western New York with a number of different churches, and you know, Steve being obviously instrumental in that. We're going to be back right after this. I want to talk, Ryan, quickly about what God's Word says, because I think we cannot overstate the fact that God's Word not only asks of us but demands of us that we get involved in the lives of people who are, and we as the church take our hands and act out justice and mercy and love and in the world around us. Mm-hmm. So you're listening to Christ Together Radio. We'll be back right after this.
This is Christ Together Radio, a program where we help you join God on his mission. Listen in as hosts Brett Larson and Ryan Cozy bring you into the roundtable discussion of what God is doing through the Church of Western New York.
Welcome back to Christ Together Radio. I'm Brett Larson. I'll be hosting for this last segment. I've been hosting, and I will be hosting, along with Ryan Cozy.
He has no plans to leave.
I have no plans to leave, at least this segment. and I have a family to feed, too, so there's always that. Ryan and I are hosting Christ Together Radio in an effort to bring what God is doing on mission in Western New York to you, bring stories of just different ways. It's kind of cool, Ryan, that we get to see, you know, everything from human trafficking and initiatives to not doing human trafficking.
No, against.
By the way,
we are against human trafficking.
Let me make that very clear.
Duly noted.
But Julie came in and really cool ministry to see just getting in there and making a difference, standing in the gap for those who need it. And same kind of thing today with foster care and rooting for children and getting in and standing in the gap between them and, you know, maybe a life of crisis. And that's something we really haven't talked about much, too. But what happens if we don't? And that's a big issue, isn't it, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, one of my great desires in this radio show is, yes, I want to highlight what the church is doing organizationally. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that when churches come together organizationally, they can support and be instrumental in seeing initiatives happen where we're getting after the goal, which is joining God on his mission for the saturation of the gospel in the region. We absolutely are for that. But one of my great passions is helping the everyday follower of Christ understand that God, in his infinite wisdom, he decided to use everyday people to accomplish his mission. And when we're talking about everyday people, we're talking about everyday people, you. That you have this great opportunity. And ultimately, the reality is we have this opportunity. God is going to accomplish his mission, whether you want to jump in on it or not. He's not gonna be disappointed in terms of, well, now I'm going to quit because I'm not going to do this. No, he'll find people who are willing. But the reality is we have this great opportunity, and there are those that ultimately they may proclaim that they have Jesus at the center of their life, but that gospel-related fruit, when you look at their life, I don't know that there's necessarily evidence of that. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when people don't do that, it's really a bummer. And to be honest, I think it contributes to the narrative of hypocrisy that people have toward evangelical Christians in this country. And it's very disappointing. Yeah. But that hypocritical narrative is there for a reason, that there's some truth to it. Mm-hmm. And we have an incredible opportunity here. You know, a good book that I think about, Kinnaman and Lyons wrote the book Unchristian, Dave Kinnaman, Gabe Lyons. They wrote the book Unchristian a handful of years ago, but it's one of those books that I continue to come back to on my shelf. And one of the things that they try to talk about in that book is there was a moment when a lot of historians look at the explosive growth of the church, and they immediately go, well, it was when Constantine said, you know, let Christianity be the religion of Rome. Now, yeah. Council of Nicaea came out of that. I mean, a bunch of stuff came out of that, and that's great. But their argument is actually, you know, to be honest, like, yeah, that was certainly helpful that the Roman government was saying, okay, there's some truth to that. But in actuality, like, the bigger explosive part that they contend in terms of the expansion of Christianity was the plague of Rome.
Yeah.
And that was the idea that when everybody booked out of Rome because of the plague, there was a group of people that stayed and there was a group of people that ran in to help the afflicted, and those people were known as Christians. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like this is one of those kind of moments that we have with the Every Child Initiative to contribute to debunking the narrative of our hypocrisy and really rolling up our sleeves and saying we're in the game. Mm. And it's our hope that we can do that.
Mm-hmm. And we're not just in the game in theory, and we're not just in the game in verbal kind of commitment or even organizational commitment, but
right.
real people putting tangible effect to the gospel, and that doesn't change overnight.
No, it doesn't. But I will tell you this: there are some real signs of hope that are beginning to encourage us a lot. Like one is just the sustainability of the Every Child Initiative. This isn't a flash in the pan that's flickered out.
Yeah,
there's some stability here. We're growing in our ability to grow it. To follow the Lord in it, that's an exciting thing. But I'd love to tell you a little bit about just even an initiative very recently at our church. We had an opportunity to focus on a portion of God's Word, Micah 6:8, mm-hmm. and just just to read the scripture out real quick. It says, and this is the NIV, "He has shown you, or mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Mm-hmm. Okay? And so we had an opportunity in the month of November. One of the Sundays is internationally recognized as Orphan Sunday. And so Pastor John Camardo, who's our executive pastor connected to Every Child Initiative, Pastor Leroy Wiggins, who's our men's ministry pastor, mm-hmm. and also our Cheektowaga campus pastor, and myself, we had an opportunity to talk about to continue a discussion in and around Micah 6:8. And orphan and foster care is centrally located around this conversation. But one of the things that we began to talk about was, what does it look like in our life to pursue acting justly? What does it look like in our life to love mercifully? And what does it look like to walk in humility, walk humbly with our God? And the reality was that the examples that Pastor John was able to give in his own experience as part of the Every Child Initiative, and someone who not only provides leadership of it, but he and his family are also mm-hmm. foster parents. They've adopted two kids. It's been a beautiful story. They've had other kids in their home in care, and it's just been wonderful. But one of the things that was incredibly encouraging to us that gives us hope to this point was at the end of this service that we had brought a number of organizations into our three campuses, and a couple that come to mind. I don't know that I'm going to remember every one of them, but Gateway Longview was one. Connection with Department of Social Services was another. The PATH, People Against Trafficking Humans. Mm-hmm. Again, we were looking at poor, vulnerable, marginalized people. Mm-hmm. Saving Grace Ministries, Lockport Cares, Lockport Care Net. There was a variety, and I'm missing some, but there was a handful of ministries there. Jericho Road was there as well. The volunteerism that came out of that weekend it has staggered us. I mean, it has been unbelievable. We literally had hundreds of people after listening to the Word of God and listening to the testimony of a few of us to say, here's how we are pursuing that. You know, and I've talked in prior episodes about my passion to want to bridge the urban and suburban divide. Mm-hmm. So that I spoke about that in particular. Right. But you saw the opportunity for three people to share how they're trying to contextually enter into following God and His Word in this region. And the number of people that came to the areas after each of our services was staggering. And we walked away literally with hundreds of people who have expressed interest, have signed up, and have said, I want to know more about how I can walk, or how I can act justly, walk mercifully, love mercifully, and walk in humility with my God. Mm-hmm. And there, to me, that is a huge flicker of hope for the evangelical church in this region. And Steve, I don't know if you want to add to that in terms of what you experienced from that Sunday, but yeah. I've got a lot of hope for this. I really do. I feel like God's people are waking up to this.
Yeah, I would just echo everything you just said. And I was at the table afterwards, and same thing. It was one of those things where I kind of prepared for it, and I was like, okay, it'll be cool if we get a few people. But it really was to a point where it was like, you know, four or five people deep at the table waiting to get the information about every child. And as Ryan was saying, you know, Gateway, we had representatives from Gateway there, and GA Family Services were on either side of me. And it was just incredible to see the response.
Yeah.
You know, just it was really almost overwhelming. And you know, one of the things that I'd like to tell people about when it especially comes to volunteering through every child, patience is certainly required of you. I'm going to be honest with you, because as I said prior, you know, foster parents,
you can't be ready to snap and take in the foster.
No,
child.
No.
Not good, I mean, cozy.
Patience is key for those of you who want to be foster adoptive parents. But on the flip side, those of you who want to just volunteer and help those families, patience is just as critical. Because I said before, foster families don't ask for help. So if you have signed up and or if you want to sign up to volunteer, be patient with us. Those opportunities, as they come up, we email out to everybody and say this is the opportunity. But those might be sporadic every now and then. It depends on what the need is. But again, there's other ways on top of, you know, partnering along with small groups and prayer groups. We have a ton of volunteer opportunities that are listed out on the website now, where if people just want to get patched in and help somehow, they can do it.
Every-child.com. Ryan, one of the things that sticks out to me in Micah 6:8 is a lot of times we look at Old Testament and we think, well, okay, he was just telling people how to act toward each other back then. But one of the things that sticks out to me in that verse is, he has showed thee what is good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, interpreting that really good things to come, or what is good to come, or and I think it really means what the Messiah will bring about, and it really refers to the gospel.
Yeah.
The Old Testament points to the gospel, points to the cross, and you know, the prophet there points to the fact, what is, he has shown thee what good things are to come, and those good things are the fact that the church is to, you know, walk justly, or to
act justly,
and
love,
to
mercy,
love mercy,
and
walk
humbly,
with our God.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, again, let's contribute to debunking the narrative that people have a hypocritical narrative toward Christians, and you know, it is what it is. But this is when people that love the Lord press themselves into pursuing God and His Word and in prayer, in solitude and in silence, there are very powerful things that can happen. And you know, my thought is, like, when we begin to exercise this way of life, loving to act justly, loving mercy, and walking in humility, it is a contrary narrative to what many people experience, and it begs a question. And Dwight Smith, who's a missiologist, he talked about, like, these ideas contribute to an enigmatic life, a mysterious life to a lost world. And when something is mysterious, people pursue it, and they want to ask questions about it. And so that's the hope that I have in this, is that I don't think the days of church history should be limited just to the plague of Rome and the explosiveness of the gospel there. And in fact, when you look around the world and you see the church in Africa, when you see the church in Asia, when you see the church in Latin America, there is incredible movement that's happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's continue to contribute to church history here.
Yeah.
That when we the simplicity of living with gospel intentionality is enigmatic to this world, and it will beg a question. It doesn't guarantee that people will come to know Jesus. Yeah. But it gives us the opportunity to have the platform to, with integrity, talk with people about Jesus.
And we don't want to be talking about, you know, all the guys that did great stuff in this vein of humanitarianism and just reaching out to people from 100 years ago. You know,
right.
We don't want to be talking about, or even, you know, even more than that, William Wilberforce or mm-hmm. going to, you know, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, people who actually cared and got involved in caring about people. We don't want to, like, have to go that far back. Let's just go back to like a few years ago where this started, and let's get involved as a church to say, hey, what a great time in church history that the church rose up in the midst of a very wealthy nation and said enough, and we're going to get involved. And that does happen. Yeah. It happens across our country. It happens, but mass scale.
Yeah.
Just digging in and making a difference. It's so important. It's what we're asked to do.
And I will say this, you know, you talked about patience, and I, you know, people have asked me, like, you know, how is it not maddening to pursue saturation and then see, you know, the results that you see? And I borrowed this from a friend who is a church planter in Philadelphia. Slow is fast.
Mm-hmm.
That if you take the time incrementally on the front end to really pursue God, invest in people, invest in kingdom things, there is a long-term fruit that will be yielded there. Now, I'm 40 years old. I'll be 40 this, mm-hmm. this coming year. And the reality is I look at life different than I did when I was 20.
Is that why you have the vet?
No, I do not have a Corvette. Okay. I'm not Corvette guy.
I'm
not Corvette guy rocking the Moulet.
No,
that is not me. No, but I mean, now I lost my train.
I'm sorry, bro. I'm so sorry.
No, I just, for what it's worth, I just think, I lost it.
Slow is fast.
Slow is, slow is fast. The idea that if we take the time on the front end to invest in the right things, to pour into the right things, to cultivate those things, it does yield a longer term harvest. And at 40 years old, like, I still believe that I could see the full saturation of the gospel happen in this region. If that's not what God allows, then I can lay some track for my children.
Yeah.
And they can lay some track for their children.
It's really true of all ministry is it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. Whether you're planning a church, turning a church around,
right.
Whether you're running a radio station,
yep.
You know, 54 years we've been in this market. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
My dad, I can remember one of the very first things, he's been just such an instrumental mentor in my life, said, buddy, one of the things you got to know about this is it ain't a sprint, it's a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to go slow and steady and you will win.
Yeah.
But if you think it's a sprint, you're going to get frustrated.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with any kind of ministry you do. It's that you got to be patient enough to let God work.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks again for having me. I appreciate it.
Again, it's every-child.com. So Every Child Ministries is every-child.com. Look it up. See how you can get involved. See what God would have you to do today. And maybe just open God's Word and see if He speaks to you. You know, read through Micah chapter 6 and read it in context. And then Micah 6:8 is where you want to land. And just ask the Lord, God, what do you want from me? And let the Holy Spirit work in your life. Go to everychild.com. If you want to know more about Christ Together Radio, go to wdcxradio.com, click on programs, and then click Christ Together Radio. You can email us right from the webpage there, and we'd be happy to respond. And we'll see you next week here, Ryan.
That's right.
Same bat time, same bat place.
Yep.
Or if you listen to us online, we're there all the time.
Yes, we are.
It's spooky, but we're there all the time. Christ Together Radio.
Thanks for listening to Christ Together Radio. To join in, email Brett and Ryan at ctr@wdcxradio.com. Join us next week for more great discussion about Christ together.